Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of March 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Hope you picked up those tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook. If not, you have just a couple hours left. You can do it online at willag.org or within the next, hour or so at 800-898-1065. They're just $30. Today, during our show, of course, we'll talk with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey. And along the way, we'll catch up on what's been happening in the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On Friday afternoon, futures finished higher for the day across the grains and oil seeds. March contract in the corn was at 354.5 on its settlement price, 0.75 cents higher. May up a penny and 0.75 cents at 358.25, and July at 363.5, up 2.25. December futures 378, 2.5 cents higher. It was the soy complex that really bounced. March beans up 14.25 for the day at $8.70.5. The May at 14.75 cents higher finished 878.5, and July at 884.5, up 14.25. August beans up 14, September up 13.25, and November beans of next year are the new crop, that is, up at $8.91. They're 13 cents higher. Bean meal futures March contract 267.70, $5.70 higher. The March at $30.73, and the bean oil up 32 cents. March wheat futures at the soft red 454.75, up 1.5. July at 466.75, a penny higher. July hard red winter wheat at $4.78, up 2.25 cents. Live cattle futures April contract 136.42.5, up 97.5 cents. June at 126.50, up 87.5 cents. Feeder cattle in the July at $158.17.5 for 100 pounds, 57.5 cents higher. And the lean hogs April contract up 62.5 cents at $70.97.5. Of course, you're listening to Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. We're here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to all of our agricultural programming, including Commodity Week. It's up already for this week at willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil trading the April contract at $35.86 a barrel. That's $1.29 higher. Ethanol futures at $1.38.6 is up a penny for the day. Gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB at $1.32.9, up 0.3 cents. And heating oil at $1.15.8. That's diesel fuel at 0.3 cents higher. Natural gas at $1.67.25, up 0.3 cents. Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 16,953. It's up 34 points. The U.S. dollar at 97.35 is down 0.251. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,258 are 25 cents lower for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area on this Friday afternoon. Sunny skies, 43 tonight, a chance of rain. That'll mix with some snow after midnight. It'll gradually end, and then we'll just have cloudy skies and a low of 34. South-southeast winds overnight at 6 to 9, and then tomorrow partly sunny, a high of 48 degrees, on a west-southwest wind at 9 to 16. Those gust to 22 and turn out of the north-northwest in the afternoon. Partly cloudy will drop to 30 degrees on Saturday night. The northwest winds will stay with us and bring us sunny skies on a Sunday with a high of 52 degrees as they turn to the southeast and are light out of that direction at 5 to 10 miles an hour. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear from Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's Friday afternoon. It's the March the 4th, and we're joined now by Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, you know, it was a big day in Chicago, and there were lots of things happening. I'd kind of like to get your macro overview of why the soybeans managed to rally 14 cents today and what this might mean in the marketplace. And if you've got some of the weekly trades, that would be good, too.
Yeah, I was able to eke out the soybean weekly trade up about 1.7%. I think the simplifying it down to one trade that gave the soybeans extra strength against the corn especially was the idea in the trade that with the equities stronger and the crude oil stronger, the soybeans felt support from that, while the wheat couldn't seem to garner as much support because of the European wheat. The milling wheat in France and Paris dropped almost 3% on the day. It had a range of over 4% on the day. And that seemed to really take a lot of the pull out of the wheat and the push out of the wheat. This even though we had a substantially drier pattern shift in the midday GFS model update, substantially drier in the hard red wheat belt, Todd. We have Hutchinson, Kansas now, less than a half an inch of rain the next 10 days. Wichita, 0.2 inch. And Guymon, Oklahoma, only 0.1 inch of rain, with temperatures in those areas getting up into the upper 70s. Low 80s. But I think the Chicago U.S. wheat was taken hostage by the milling wheat and the Paris wheat and no fresh lows in the U.S. dollar. That in turn, I think, caused a renewed sense of buying beans and selling corn. And we talked about this last week about the potential for the beans to rally and maybe getting some hedges in place if the beans could rally going into the acreage report, because I think we are buying bean acres at this point. We made the 2.36 level in the November bean December corn ratio. That's a 10-month high in that ratio, and I think this is a breakout now in the November beans against the December corn. And be very ready, I think, next week if we can get through Wednesday's USDA report without a big push to the downside, targeting that 905 breakout area. If we can break out above that, then maybe 9.25 to 940 would be the areas to get some hedges in place before we see the acreage and stocks report.
Yeah, so this would be for the November contract or new crop, correct?
And then yes.
And then what do you think for old crop? Because there will be some that still have some beans around.
Yeah, and this is where I think there's probably enough short covering by the funds. I think today was really one of the key days that played off of the end of February and what we did earlier this week with the crude oil. I mean, if you look at crude oil, and I'll get to your answer on the lead month beans here in a second, but crude oil rally of over 4% today. You broke a downtrending resistance line. It's been in place since June of 2014. Now you're at the highest level since mid-January. So that says a lot to the commodity indexes and the funds that trade those commodity indexes, because in the Goldman Sachs commodity index, for instance, the six energy commodities out of the 25 total commodities is about 60% of the weight of the total index. So when the energies move, it's like a rising tide lifts all boats, or a sinking tide sinks all boats. And so I think this is where the beans could have additional upside, and maybe that 905 area in the May beans would be the ultimate target to get to. At that point, you'll probably start to see a little bit more widening of basis, if I had to guess. And obviously, a bullish report on Wednesday for beans, a carryover number that would stay below 80 million tons for world soybean carryover, maybe you could extend those gains. I think the USDA report on Wednesday will mean more to the old crop, because we're going to get a fresh idea of what South American supplies are coming real soon.
Right. So crude oil, you're saying, is supportive. A higher price in crude oil is supportive, especially because you're thinking now that this is a longer-term move for both the old and new crop or lead option in November soybeans, and lifting the rest of the commodities along the way as well. And then we have kind of a convergence on the soybean-corn ratio that should cause hold it and let me think about this, because there are a lot of things happening here. So
producers are probably going to try and put more beans in at the expense of corn.
That's what I thought. So the convergence will be towards soybeans.
Right.
That would mean a higher price, at least at the moment, trying to buy acres, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. And I think this goes back to what we talked about this morning. Everything you said, yes, 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 on as far as answering your question. The real key, the real final word in all this, I think, is the dollar. If we can go below that February low that we just put in a little under a week ago of 95.28 on the lead month March index, and if we could go below that 95.28 level and take out that low, I think then you've got a trade that is starting to feel better about emerging markets, and assuming that inflationary pressure is starting to finally come around. And that's really the key to me, as far as this is a really long-term low that we can sink our teeth into.
Are you thinking weaker dollar then too?
I'm hoping that. That goes against what USDA put out in their update last week. The Office of the Chief Economist has literally said that he sees a firming dollar into 2017, and that's going to weaken China's growth. He would be correct if that would happen, but I think both the fundamentals and the technicals would suggest to me that that's a kind of an uphill battle to get a stronger dollar. The way you get a stronger dollar is obviously more bad news out of China. So they all work together. I'm hoping that the worst is over with China and we've built enough negativity in there. Capital flows go back into China. That weakens the dollar, and the Office of the Chief Economist ends up not being as accurate.
You know, just when we thought it was all calm, things start to turn around, a calm and low, I guess, in prices. And all of a sudden, things start to get kind of rocky and more fun in the marketplace. It's always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much. We're looking so forward to having you next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Me too. I'll see you soon, Todd.
All right. Thanks so much. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. He'll be one of a dozen of our regular on-air voices that will be over in Covington, Indiana, along with four extras, including Agribull's Eric Snodgrass, to talk about the weather forecast for the coming year. It's all beginning to move again. Just as I said, about the time you think that things are a yawner, they begin to move in the marketplace, and now might be a really important time. And this is kind of the last call, actually is the last call, for you to buy a ticket for the all-day Ag Outlook. You can do that at willag.org. It's $30, or just call this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. But don't wait, because now is the time. By the time we get to the end of the day today, we'll shut it off. Frankly, we've got a pretty full house over there, so you need to get that ticket as soon as possible. In today's agricultural news, Senate Democrats are insisting they'll fight to defeat the voluntary GMO labeling bill backed by some of their agricultural colleagues, Democrats and Republicans alike, and hundreds of farm and food groups, to head off state-by-state patchwork of labeling laws to be put in place, beginning with Vermont this summer. Oregon Democrat Jeff Merkley has introduced an alternative national mandatory labeling bill to upend what some of his Democratic colleagues have mockingly called the Dark Act.
And should the Dark Act, the Deny Americans Right to Know, that passed out of the Agriculture Committee, come to this floor, many of us will stand up to fight it every possible way.
Other Democrats, including California's Barbara Boxer, say they'll do the same. Merkley complains voluntary labeling that passed the Agriculture Committee 14-6 this week with the support of three Democrats supersedes state laws and denies consumers critical food information.
And it strips our states. It's a federal overreach, and it's assault on consumer information and consumer rights. It's just wrong, and we will oppose it vigorously.
Merkley's comments, in line with Democrats on and off the Agriculture Committee, suggest a difficult path forward for the committee-passed bill, despite promises by both sides to work on a compromise. But Monsanto says the current farm economy slump threatens the company's long-term profits. CEO Hugh Grant says the targets may need to be pushed back to early in the next decade amid weak agricultural markets. Farm income is dropping for the third straight year, according to a recent projection by USDA. Monsanto's long-term target has been to double earnings per share from 2016 through 2019. Now, weaker currencies are hurting foreign market revenues, while U.S. agricultural commodity prices have reduced profits for farmers, forcing them to cut spending. Monsanto also cited additional headwinds from a delay in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's approval of dicamba herbicide for use on crops as part of Monsanto's Roundup Ready Extend system. Meanwhile, the company has lowered prices for its seeds amid aggressive discounts for U.S. farmers by its main competitor, DuPont. Well, a new poll by National Public Radio, or NPR, finds messaging encouraging consumers to eat less meat are not really changing dietary habits. The NPR survey of 3,000 Americans concluded the impact has been negligible when it comes to diets. The results were compared with a similar NPR poll from 3 years ago that found a slight drop in the number of people who said they were eating less meat, even though 30% of respondents said publicly linking processed meats to a higher cancer risk could cause them to change their eating habits. The new NPR poll conducted in December found 7.4% of people eat no meat during a typical week, down only slightly from 2012. 51% said they eat meat 1 to 4 times a week, and 38% said they eat it 5 or more times a week. NPR concluded there may be a growing chorus of veggie cheerleaders, but don't assume everyone is influenced by them. Let's move from NPR, but stay in Washington, D.C., where the American Farm Bureau Federation, along with other agricultural groups, revealed a data repository that supporters say will give farmers ultimate control over their business data. The data comes from high-tech farm machinery like tractors and tilling equipment, planters, sprayers, harvesters, agricultural drones, and the newly formed Agricultural Data Coalition will empower farmers to better control, manage, and maximize the value of the data that is collected every day in their fields. ADC's goal is to build a national online repository where farmers can securely store and control the information collected by their machinery and devices. And finally today, some weather models that initially showed a La Nina would develop by July have been pushed back a month or two. That according to Kyle Tapley. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at MDA Weather Services. He also points out that El Nino has been weakening since November at a slower pace than was previously thought. The meteorologist says if we don't have a quicker transition to La Nina, we have less likelihood of a very hot and dry summer across the United States. This would be a positive, of course, for crops at home and in countries like Australia and India. Tapley elaborated that MDA is calling for just above normal temperatures across the eastern and central U.S. this summer and close to normal precipitation in most corn and soybean areas across the Midwest. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Soybean farmers in 10 states across the Midwest are being asked 20 questions. The primary goal of the Soybean Checkoff-funded project is to benchmark current yield and management practices in producer fields. This will happen across the north-central region of the United States. Think the Midwest. The benchmarking data will help identify key management factors in each state and across the region. The hope is producers will use the information to increase soybean yield on their farms and do that with an input use efficiency that would improve profits. Essentially, University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafstiger says the project is a survey that aggregates data so that each farm becomes a plot.
It doesn't replace what we're trying to do in some of our replicated research, but it's every field becomes a plot in a system like this. And you say, you know, for these thousands of fields, here's what we did and here's what we got and here's what made a difference in terms of yield.
The collaborative project is directed through the North Central Region Program. Farmers in Nebraska, Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, Kansas, Illinois, and North Dakota will be asked to self-report field yield and associated crop management practices data to 1. Evaluate current on-farm management relative to recommended optimal practices, and 2. Discern the yield impact of individual factors and their relative importance. The project involves farmers filling out a form with about 20 questions on it, says Extension's Emerson Nafsicker.
It does, and we're being very careful to make sure that there's never any names attached to any of this. It's using survey data to produce predictions about how we manage in a particular soil in the future. And that's what applied research is always about. We want to predict what will happen when we narrow the rows or increase the seeding rate or add fungicide or do something like this to soybean fields in the future.
Data collected from the surveys will be aggregated and analyzed for patterns and implications. Project coordinators in each state, NAFSIGR, for instance in Illinois, will manage the data collection and privacy issues. The survey will cover several growing seasons. The data is now being gathered on the 2014 and 15 crop years. Now, if you're interested in participating in this survey, you should contact Emerson NAFSIGR, agronomist at the University of Illinois. You can do that by visiting the Bulletin website. It's bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. There you'll find his email address, and he'd like you to contact him or call him at the University of Illinois Department of Crop Sciences, and he'll send that survey right out to you. He'll make sure that it stays nice and safe when it comes back, and your data will be aggregated into the whole of the state of Illinois and other states as well. The goal, says NAFSIGR, is to collect more than 500 field-level surveys. This is the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Andy Schaefer now joins us. He's at the Everly, Iowa facility in northwestern Iowa that belongs to the Andersons. Joins us on a Friday afternoon. Hey, thanks for being with us, Andy. So tell me about conditions on the ground there, because according to the grain bids I see, there's a big difference between here at the Andersons and where you are at the Andersons, but that's been the case all year and normally would be the case anyway.
Yeah, we just got a lot of corn in our backyard. Obviously, the big crop this past fall is really pressuring our basis, and the commercial elevators like ourselves, the farmers as well, have a lot of corn, and we're seeing also a lot of corn from southern Minnesota head down in our neck of the woods. So a lot of those ethanol plants are getting corn in southern Minnesota because southern Minnesota just doesn't have a whole lot of places to ship. So we're seeing that corn move south into our backyard.
So it's moving south despite what folks here in our part of the world would see as a pretty wide basis at this point. What is your spot bid, by the way?
Our spot bid, 3,200 basis, which is equivalent to 326 cash.
And this is enough to get farmers to move grain to you from Minnesota? And how far away is that?
No, these guys aren't moving much cash, aren't selling much at this price. You know, when futures were back up there around 375, 370, they were moving some cash, and a lot of them did sell stuff for March delivery, but you know that was 25 cents ago, not
what,
today.
What do you think it'll take to move it? Time or money?
We got to get futures back up in that 375 range again in order to get guys moving corn, and because that, you know, that gets them close to 350, 345, and that's what it's going to take to move a little bit more corn. And today, I just don't see how that's going to happen.
Yeah, so it's going to take quite a bit of time then, in your opinion.
We're going to need some weather. We're going to need a planting delay somewhere in order to get that, which would turn the market sentimentation into leading to more soybeans, and that's when rally the corn. But today it's just too early. We need to wait for the March 31st stocks report, and the grower I think is hoping for something bullish.
All right, hey, thanks so much, Andy.
Programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Pound Cake Day. The pound cake originated several centuries ago in England. The name comes from the fact that the original pound cakes contained 1 pound each of butter, sugar, eggs, and flour. By the mid-1800s, the recipe began to deviate slightly from the original formula to make a lighter cake. But it was not until the 20th century that baking powder and soda were added. On this day in agricultural history in 1634, Samuel Cole supposedly opened the first tavern in the U.S. in Boston. Sam Cole's Inn was surrounded by spacious grounds, which commanded a view of the Boston Harbor and its shipping. Later, he purchased a residence next to the Hancock Tavern, where historians believe plans for the Boston Tea Party were discussed. In 1792, Samuel Slocum was born. He invented a machine to make pins with solid heads and a machine for sticking the pins in a paper holder for sale. His machine was patented in 1841. A sliding hopper deposited a number of pins in grooves in a plate from where a row of wires pushed them into a folded paper. The machine was activated by a foot treadle. In 1792, Kona oranges were introduced to Hawaii by Captain George Vancouver. The Kona had a sweet acid balance reminiscent of the pineapple. Sailors planted citrus trees along trade routes to prevent scurvy. And in 1927, Ira Remsen died, an American chemist. He was co-discoverer with Constantine Fahlberg of saccharin, the artificial sweetener. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It's the fourth day of March. It's gorgeous outside. Be sure to visit our website and pick up your tickets, because I think it's going to stay this way through next week. Well, it might be a little gray on Tuesday for all-day ag outlook, but it's supposed to be really warm. Should be a fantastic few days. And if you get the opportunity, you want to come over to the all-day ag outlook. Tickets go on sale through this afternoon, and then we're going to shut it down. So you need to dial in right now, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Or go online at willag.org to pick your tickets up for the all-day agricultural outlook. Ticket sales will end yet this afternoon, so it's not too late. And I think probably kind of an important day with all of the things that are happening in the marketplace for you to consider the option of hearing what some of our brokers have to say about the trade in Chicago. Corn, soybeans, wheat. We'll go through all of those over at the All Day Ag Outlook with not just one or two or three or five, but a dozen of our analysts. They'll all be in-house, the folks that you have heard so often, and we'll have some specialists there, too, to talk about the do's and don'ts of production costs. So what should you do and what maybe you shouldn't do to cut production costs this year? I think it'll be fun to have on stage Emerson Nafziger and Gary Schnitke coming at this from two different perspectives. Gary's not going to tell you to cut crop insurance, of course, and I don't think Emerson's going to have too many cuts for you. There will be some, but not a lot in the production side, so we'll see how that battle turns out. Should be a fun one to watch at the All Day Ag Outlook. Again, get your tickets right now, WILLAG.org, or you can call 800-898-1065. Tickets are just $30. Now, here's the weather forecast.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is State Climatologist Jim Angel. Looking back at the traditional winter months of December, January, and February, the statewide temperature was 33.5 degrees. That's 4.4 degrees above average and the seventh warmest winter on record. The statewide precipitation was 8.9 inches. That's 2.1 inches above average and the 11th wettest winter on record. Three-fourths of that fell in December as rain. Snowfall for the winter season has been running below average, with northern Illinois receiving 15 to 25 inches, while central and southern Illinois have received only 5 to 10 inches. The forecast for this weekend is for highs to be in the 40s in the north and in the 50s in the south on Saturday. Sunday morning will be the coldest of the week, with lows in the 20s in the north and in the 30s in the south. By the afternoon, temperatures will reach back up into the 50s across the state. Monday and Tuesday will be warmer still, with highs in the 60s across the state. Wednesday and Thursday will be a little cooler again, with highs in the 50s to the north and low 60s in the south. Overnight lows during the week will be in the upper 30s and low 40s in the north and in the 40s and 50s in the south. Those temperatures are well above average for this time of year. There are chances of rain on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Potential rainfall amounts could be large, ranging from 2 to 4 inches in southern Illinois and 1 to 2 inches in central and northern Illinois.
Our thanks to Jim Angel for his update of the weather forecast. We'll be back next week, of course, with our regular analyst, Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. He's traveling this week. Speaking of Agrible, they are a major sponsor of our All Day Ag Outlook. Don't forget those tickets are still available, just $30 at WILLAG.com. Or at 800-898-1065.